And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
It's Earth Day 2008, and we're celebrating by hearing what kids have to say about their Earth and nature, and some thoughts for parents on how to help keep their kids' sense of wonder. And then we go in depth with the Dalai Lama, who this past weekend delivered an important address about sustainability, his special Earth Day tribute. This is a very special Earth Day edition of the Wild Side News, which begins right now.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
It's working. After 38 years of trying to educate us all about our Earth and the environment, the message is being heard. And today, we prove it as we go not to the pundits, politicians, and professionals. No, we're going right to the source of truth, the children. In this first segment, we hear from Mr. Gomez's joint first and second grade class at Capri Elementary in Encinitas, California, as they share what they know about nature, the environment, and Earth Day. And because I know there'll be lots of parents listening, I'm going to share my top 10 ways to help keep your kids' sense of wonder alive. And then, in a change of format, we'll be moving the weekly Earth Summit to the second and third segments of today's show, as we hear a special Earth Day speech about sustainability by the Dalai Lama. He'll be addressing the topic in Segment 2 and taking questions in Segment 3. So let's now head on over to Capri Elementary School, where Mr. Gomez's first and second graders have a lot to share on this Earth Day 2008.
Happy birthday, everybody!
Yes, it's working. After 38 years, we deserve to hear what a great classroom of first and second graders are anxious to share. We start out with a special greeting from our first graders.
Hello, Mr. Gomez's class.
And the same now from our second graders.
Hello, Mr. Gomez's class.
And then we get down to business. We first heard what was on the minds of these young people on this Earth Day.
Don't cut down trees. It's because that it gives you oxygen and that helps you breathe.
You shouldn't throw trash on the beach because then, especially the little plastic round things that hold the soda cans together, because a bird could either eat it or a bird's head could get stuck in it.
You should get more trees, because then they make the earth air cleaner.
Well, I'm making this little space city thingy out of, plastic bottles, that kind of stuff, because it saves the environment.
Don't throw litter on the ground. I mean, don't litter, because if everybody litters, it will make the world so messy and will be gross.
I think Mexico or something else have writing all over it, and you can actually see the air.
Don't pollute, because it would go in the ocean, and then if you there's poison in some trash, and then
The fish could eat it, and if you eat the fish, you could get poisoned too.
Don't throw things that are plastic on the ground, or don't throw things in the trash, because they'll make you're polluting, and polluting is bad for people, you, animals, and the environment.
And then we opened it up about some things they liked about the Earth.
When I went to Costa Rica, I liked the rainforest because there was no trash on the ground and there wasn't any pollution.
You need animals because you get milk and milk makes you healthy, like if cows give you milk and cheese and stuff like that.
Animals are important because some animals eat all the weeds that grow in your backyard, like rabbits, and some birds do too.
Like cheetahs. We don't want to keep killing them because their habitat is almost extinct.
My favorite animal is a rat, and we shouldn't keep killing them.
But there is lots of important work to do, and this was what Mr. Gomez's students advised us for this Earth Day.
Well, you're celebrating Earth Day because you think about what you do, how you hurt the environment by, like, littering and polluting and using gas which pollutes and stuff like that.
You should also... Earth Day is also around because we keep on cutting down trees, and Earth Day you should plant some kind of plant.
Earth Day can remind you if one day you littered and then you say to yourself that, why did I litter? I can hurt the earth.
On Earth Day, you can walk more and not use as much car gasoline and pollute the air.
You should not do a bunch of things. You should not smoking, because smoking is bad for the environment and you, it can kill you. And smoke is bad for the environment. And if smoke gets into the sky, like a whole bunch of sky, you can get cancer, and if you cut down trees, it will not help you breathe air, so don't use a lot of paper. Paper is made out of trees.
Every Earth Day, you should go to a new environment and plant and take out all the weeds and plant trees and flowers and everything.
And on this primary day in Pennsylvania, where the future of the nation will be shaped by the voters, we asked what these first and second graders had to say about the oil crisis and possible solutions.
Cocoa beans, I don't know what it's called, but comes from rainforest, and they cut down the rainforest.
But scientists have finally figured out how to make gas out of corn oil.
You use oil for cooking, like cooking oil, and so you need that to stay. Like if you can't cook with cooking oil,
you don't have the food, you don't have the food that needs cooking oil.
Use more natural gas for your cars.
The scientists have figured out how to make cars run out of to put corn and water to make the cars run, so the earth stays clean.
And then we just opened it up for some free sharing of ideas and concerns.
Yesterday was, I was climbing a mountain with my dad and my brother, and we found like a piece of trash and my dad picked it up. And we saw, and that was like the only piece of trash, but we were, and then like the wind blew it everywhere. And so my dad just put it in his pocket and then we threw it away when we found a garbage. So that's why she shouldn't pollute. And there's bugs everywhere around it. So if they ate it, they could like get really sick or something.
You shouldn't pick flowers because flowers make the world beautiful.
I hope that in some years, people will stop using landfills to dump their trash and find some place else to dump their trash. Use trash for something else and try to do as much as you can to use trash over again.
If you like nature, you don't want to cut it down, because some people cut animals down, and there was kind of something bad about killing animals to eat. Some animals and insects and bugs can actually help some things. But like some bugs eat plants, that's bad, but some bugs or animals eat those things, so they help. So, and in the future, we want everything, like the smoking things, all the polluting things, to not be good, because there'll probably be a lot of electronic things. There could be, so we kind of need to get ready, because there could be a bunch of things that pollute and by 15 years by now, and we don't want that to happen, so we want to stop polluting right away.
In truth, this is what Earth Day has always been about. And so a final message from all of the students in Mr. Gomez's first and second grade class at Capri Elementary in Encinitas, California. Earth Day was always about planting seeds of change, and it's working. So following on that tradition, as I know there are lots of parents who will be listening to this particular segment, I want to give them my best advice on how to make sure that this great sense of wonder remains. If you have anything to do with raising children, or know someone who does, then listen or email a link to those who have kids. Something's gone wrong with our relationship with nature. How we got here and why is for another time. But what we can do about it is so important that I'm going to get right to the point. We must restore our children's natural love of nature. We can. In fact, it's easy, because kids love nature naturally. We see it all the time. Children love animals. They love to watch birds, squirrels, bugs, and butterflies. They like to imitate animals, act like animals, make animal sounds. They love climbing in trees, lifting up rocks, splashing through creeks. Left to their own devices, kids explore and learn about nature every time they go outside. Most of us remember growing up and the free roaming we did. But times have changed, and kids are kept indoors. We all know why. But in fact, it has gone too far. Kids must bond with nature for their own intellectual, emotional, and psychological development, and because in the years ahead, figuring out how to restore the natural world is the most important single challenge they will face. Therefore, we as parents and elders have a responsibility to prepare them. We hold their future in our hands. We are the wise ones. And right now, we need to change some bad habits and make the effort to restore the natural sense of wonder that every child is born with. As a naturalist and educator, I've worked with thousands and thousands of kids, teaching them about nature. And today, I'm going to share my deepest sense of what works best to touch the souls of young people in ways that keep their love of their earth in balance. So, in no particular order, here are the 10 most important things for good nature parenting. 1. Teach a respect for and love of nature. All of these things are important, but this one is the most important. We must, as parents, elders, and friends, demonstrate to our children that we honor living things, that they have worth and value. We must provide a broad sense that we love all of life, which makes up nature, and hold it as a sacred part of being human, to be gentle and kind, and protect all of nature, because it is so very important. There are many ways to do this. From a child's earliest days, when you go outdoors, take a moment to appreciate it. Smile, smell, point out beautiful things and say things like, "I love my earth," or "Isn't this beautiful?" Pay special attention to significant living things in your neighborhood, like special trees. Share with your child the changing of the seasons in ways that show your appreciation for nature's cycles of birth, life, and death. Instill in your child that it is important to treat all of life as sacred. 2. Promote a sense of wonder. Children are born with a natural sense of wonder. They are constantly touching, tasting, shaking, and breaking things to see what happens. This natural desire to learn runs wild in nature. A blade of grass becomes an instrument. A shiny stone makes a child think of bird eggs. Pick up a rock and a hidden community is revealed. Bird poop needs to be dissected with a stick. It's all part of wondering. However, in our shrink-wrapped, safety-obsessed world, children are kept from touching natural things most of the time. They hear parents and others warning them about how these things are dangerous. They are dirty and can make you sick. And quickly, the sense of wonder, so critical to our natural development, dies. You must keep the sense of wonder alive. How? Let kids collect things. Help them collect things. You can help by allowing them to maintain their own collections in odd things like egg cartons and boxes or in weird plastic containers. Treat their collections with respect. When they fiddle with their nature stuff, be curious too, and show your own interest in things you don't know. Let kids get dirty and mucky. They'll live. Weigh the value of chastising them for making a mess, dragging their things into your kitchen, versus rewarding their curiosity with your own sense of wonder. You can teach about not tracking in mud on a rainy day. 3. Show compassion for all living things. Every living thing wants to stay alive and not suffer. If you took a slow-motion close-up of an ant that you're about to squash with your fingertip, you would see that at some moment it would rise up in protest before it dies. Every animal will struggle when caught, because they know that being caught usually leads to their death. They know that. And although we cannot understand how they feel these things, we know that they would rather go about their business of life. Every single creature is a master of his own survival, and that will to live is something that must be honored. It must be acknowledged so that we can grow up as compassionate humans. If we learn to empathize with a beetle, there's a much better chance we will think twice before hurting each other. So anytime you see an animal suffering, share your concern with your child. Show him or her how you care for the creature. If a turtle is crossing a road, yes, if you can, let your child help save the creature from suffering by carefully moving it to safety. If you see an old arthritic dog walking with its master, share with your child how beautiful it is for the dog to still want to be with his master, even though it is in pain. For quite some time, children experiment with animals to see how they react. They pull off wings of flies, not so much to be cruel, but to see what happens. They pull legs off of ants and bugs, again, not to be cruel, but to see how it affects the way the animals walk. These are natural, and we must honor the child's mind, but at the same time, help the child understand that they can feel the animal resisting and trying to get away because they are afraid of being hurt, and that we don't know how a small bug suffers, but we know that injuries can lead to the death of the animal. These things take time to develop, so be patient. It will pay off. 4. Treat all animals as intelligent and sensitive beings. We have learned a very bad habit from science, and that is to talk of animals as if they cannot think and that their behaviors are strictly responses to their environment, reflexes. I cannot emphasize enough, as a scientist, how absolutely backward this thinking is. For science is beginning to acknowledge that animals figure things out, reason, talk, have emotions, and have very complex social relationships. That's what science informs us. But most people who have animals have a far more generous sense of the intelligence of animals, and they freely talk about it. Animals are capable of doing amazing things, finding their way home over hundreds of miles, flying thousands of miles each year to return to the same nest, building elaborate and beautiful structures like nests, caring for handicapped people, being the eyes for the blind, and more generally, somehow doing all the things that each species does and has no one to do for millions of years, no matter how small, unusual, or powerful they may be. Therefore, raise your children to see the intelligence of animals as they go about their lives. Assume that animals are aware of much of what is going on around them. Inform your children that each animal is an individual. Point out the different personalities of dogs you meet. Some are friendly, some are shy, some are aggressive, some are funny. And help your child to understand that animals are sensitive and that they respond as we do to love, tenderness, kindness, and respect. Show how they need the same kinds of things we need, and they must learn and work hard to get them. Trust me, when children sense the intelligence of the animals around them, their lives will be filled with gifts and wonder. It will provide them with a perception of the truth that will help guide them into a balanced and caring way of life. It will provide them with joy and friendships from the world at large. And it will help them develop the wisdom that animals, forests, oceans, and backyards are teeming with value and worth. Nothing can help them deal with the challenges ahead more effectively. 5. Spend time immersed in nature with no particular mission. Without spending time in nature, children will grow up with a false sense of time. They will not understand the value of being. They will require outside stimulus because they cannot feel the power of life and of this earth that is theirs if they know how to connect with it. We all know how hectic our lives are. We all know as well that even a 3-day trip to another city will extend the sense of time enormously. Kids need to be synchronized with the truth. And nothing speaks the truth like nature. Therefore, you must take the time to allow kids to be in nature with no particular purpose or task or challenge. They need the chance to sense how a day develops, from the morning mists and coolness, to the bird's song and energy, through the midday with its resting, through the afternoon's rich sunlight, and the opening up of the wild creatures, to the evening when the night creatures emerge, to the power of the night with crickets and frogs and strange calls in the darkness. And then it all happens again, the next day, and the next, and the next. And that is so good to know. So go camping, fishing, sitting along riverbanks, exploring, poking around. And in particular, spend time next to a creek, on a riverbank for the better part of an afternoon and together watch the river flow. 6. Teach intelligent use of nature. As you practice the aforementioned things which you must teach your children, you'll find that naturally a sense of the value of nature emerges, that everything has value, that wasting things really means that somewhere something has suffered or lost their homes or been killed. And as your child develops as a normal sensitive person with a sense of the wonder and interconnected spirit of all living things and the value of life itself, a natural economy will develop, a common sense with all of life. Wasting water or food, throwing away things that cost some animals their homes and lives, these things will be felt as irresponsible and hurtful. Therefore, because all living things wish to live as they were designed to live, and that it is a wondrous gift to share the earth with all of these amazing other beings, we damage ourselves when we damage the earth. We destroy our potential joy when we tear down a forest. We lose so many beautiful and spirited creatures when we drain a wetland. We destroy the mysterious balance when we pollute our lands or our lakes and oceans. Children can learn to value the wonder and develop a natural protective spirit, even if it be to protect their own private dream. After all, isn't that what we adults miss so much? The wonder of our youth, the innocence of discovery, the joy in simple things. Help your child learn to save all of these things so that they can unwrap them whenever they need for the rest of their lives. 7. Encourage expression of their findings and discoveries. Children are expressive beings. They naturally sing, dance, smile, cry, run, clap, stare, and ponder. They love to make noise, scream, scribble, paint, and draw. They like to collect and categorize and hide and save special things. Your best job as a parent, elder, or friend is to help them express all of these things. From this, they explore their own inner energetics and are allowed to feel, really feel, what life and being is all about. So when a child appears to want to express their feelings, play with them, have fun, pretend, be silly, forget about being the adult. And through time, your child will become a fully developed person, expressing who they are, how they feel in a spirit of human relationship and friendship, and nothing could be more right. And be sure to read good stories, see good movies, draw and sketch, paint, sing and dance and laugh. And in the end, life will be a better place. 8. Avoid the yucky reaction. This is hard, and we talked about it before, but it deserves another take because it is, after all, our learned response. It is important to unlearn it, suppress it, overcome it, and let it go. What is it? Try to avoid the yucky response. As I've gotten to know and talk with some of the world's greatest nature people, almost without exception, the common thread amongst them all were parents who let them be kids, who allowed their bringing home frogs in jars, bugs in bottles, snakes in sacks, rocks in boxes. For kids inclined to do such things, understand they are developing their scientific and abstract minds simultaneously, because they are collecting the vast, mysterious world of things that they had not known about, and pulling them together to look and study, think about and experiment with their own ideas. This process unites the mind into a coherent reasoning tool that will carry them through life, seeking answers, searching for the truth, and experimenting with new things. For this generation and generations to come, this will be a determinant as to whether they are equipped to deal with the world of tomorrow with reason, strength, and balance. Please allow children to get to know their world on their terms. 9. Allow kids to get hurt as part of their learning. Growing up is filled with hurt. For parents and others, we see children taking frightening falls, coming home with scraped knees, cut fingers, and burned. And yet with a little common sense and the magic healing powers of the body, these things vanish. Becoming a child of the earth will also generate scrapes, cuts, bruises, and bites. But as with falling from a chair in the kitchen or bumping a head on an end table, these too will disappear. So when your child comes inside crying from some adventure outdoors, keep it all in perspective and know that something has been learned about the real world. An element of truth has just been interjected in that little soul, and that it is a requirement of living. And as the demands for children to grow into active advocates for their earth increases, more and more of them will be heading out across the globe to restore rainforests, protect endangered habitats, develop new technologies to offset global warming, battle floods and hurricanes, and deal with whatever it is that global warming, depletion of the oceans, devastation of our mountaintops, diminishing natural resources, and an advancing world population have in store for them. This generation may have to be one of the toughest and strongest on Earth. Help them to learn to be strong. And finally, 10. Spend time in nature where nature dominates. There is an ultimate truth that we all must know. Nature runs this earth. We humans, in all of our reasonable sense of importance, are, in fact, weak compared with the wonder. The most direct means of knowing this is to head on out where nature rules, into backcountry where there are no roads, into the wilderness as far as you can go for days before making your way back. It is invaluable to the soul to be surrounded by wild, filled with bears and hawks and weasels and nematodes, walking on ancient forest beds of quiet needled carpets. And to reach a point where whatever you have with you or within you will determine in reality how you return, and if you will return, to the, quote, real world. A child experiencing this truth with a wise and experienced adult will learn more about life, time, humility, and truth than any single event. They will, in their own ways, meet themselves in ways that only such experiences can engender. And they will meet the Great Spirit, or God, or Yahweh, or Divinity, or however and whatever that is, with nothing to filter the truth. This touch with our most ancient record becomes a silent messenger throughout the days ahead, and will forever enkindle the awe which inspires beauty, peace, and love. These are my personal observations from a lifetime in love with the earth. Please do the best you can. If enough of us do, then our children and their children's children will sit around campfires in deep and wondrous woods and pass on these legends about nature in the good old days.
Nurturing children, why must we kill them with thoughtless hands? They're part of a perfect plan, and brother to man. Will this be our fate? Can we come to understand? All creatures on sea and land, before it's too late.
Coming up, a special Earth Day speech by the Dalai Lama, when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
If you take just a moment to think about Earth Day, you'll realize it's actually about the Earth, not just what's going on in the U.S. We are now one world. We are becoming ever more interconnected as globalization tethers all of our boats together. So on this Earth Day, we hear from a man who's been to the mountain and offers his vision of a sustainable world as the weekly Earth Summit brings you a special Earth Day address by the Dalai Lama. When your voice of the Earth continues, here on the Wild Side News. So much of what we hear about the future of Earth and our environment is filtered through our Western perspective. But as the world and all of its people face the sea change ahead, it's wise to broaden our perspective. Today, a special Earth Day 2008 presentation, as we go in-depth with a man who has been in the vortex of vision for the future of humankind for a long time. This last weekend, the Dalai Lama presented a series of lectures at the University of Michigan's Peter M. Wege Lecture Series, sponsored by Jewel Heart, the Tibet Fund, and the Garrison Institute. The Dalai Lama focuses on sustainability of the world's people, cultures, and environments. We bring you his talk in its entirety in this extended weekly Earth Summit. Welcome to the Weekly Earth Summit, which today will be the most important 90 minutes on Earth. I'm your host, Sydney Wildsmith. The concept of sustainability has been developing now for years. It's approached generally from the perspective of the intelligent and equitable use of our limited resources in a radically globalizing world. But the issue of sustainability goes much deeper than that, and it's rare to find anyone willing and capable of addressing the true nature of the future of humankind on this our little planet Earth. But today, this is about to change as we take the next two segments of the Wild Side News to hear the Dalai Lama address sustainability. In this first segment, we hear him speak on the subject, and in the next segment, he answers a few questions from the audience. So I am excited to bring you in its entirety this historic discussion, the Dalai Lama.
Dear brothers and sisters, and particularly the president of the university, so indeed, I'm very happy and great honor to speak with you. Right from the beginning, I want to make clear my knowledge in every field very limited. In Tibetan, chop chop kya.
There's a Tibetan expression which says that someone knows 100 things but bits here and bits there.
So if around the audience, if they come here with a lot of expectation, Dalai Lama might say some very sort of serious things or something like that, it is mistake. I have nothing to say, some profound thing. Then some cases, you see, some individual, you see, come to see me with the belief Dalai Lama has some kind of healing power. That's absolutely nonsense. I myself very skeptical to those people who claim some healing power. Many years ago in London, Albert Hall.
Royal Albert Hall.
One talk, I mentioned if someone is who sort of believe Dalai Lama have some kind of healing power. And I told, if there is someone who really have that kind of healing power, then I would like to show my sort of skin disease here. So then, the next day, I received some ointment for the skin problem. So that's a real blessing. Then, then perhaps see, among the audience, I think majority maybe simply to come with the curiosity, what that I'm going to say or something. Okay, that's no problem. So then, firstly, you see, my talk usually is without sort of notice on these things, notary. Note, just a spontaneous sort of express. Usually, you try to make some connection, the theme, like that. So may not be very smooth. There's some point from here, some point from here. So that I want to make clear. And then also in my English, naturally very limited, vocabulary very limited, and also there is no grammar sort of rules. And worst thing is getting older. My English also getting older. So difficult. So be careful. When I use certain words, that may not be what I intended. So in any way, I'm happy. Opportunity, interact, right? With people. So through that way, I consider something like education. A good opportunity to share some of my views to the audience, and maybe some new ideas, you see, may find. And then, to me, through questions, I also, see, get some sort of knowledge or awareness. The among the audience, what points they have certain sort of interest or certain concern. So helpful. Then sometimes unexpected question. That also very helpful. I say to make me think the new point. So these are as a sort of educational program. Very good. Now today, the theme, Radha.
The theme of our presentation here is sustainability in celebration of the Earth Day.
That English I don't know. What do you call
sustainability.
I can't pronounce. So, So the environment issue, I think that is, for me also, it is something new thing. When we were in Tibet, you see, because of climate condition, for example, water always pure. When we come to come across, you see, people say, "Oh, this water polluted. You cannot drink." This is okay for drinking water. Little bit sort of surprise. Then eventually, as a result of meeting with expert, some scientist, then I realize, environment issue is so important. Two reasons. Number one, taking care of our planet, environment, is something like taking care of our own home. If someone, in order to get warm heat, if your own furniture burn, it is foolish. So something like that. Without consideration about environment issue, simply, you see, they utilize maximum way on the nature resources, including trees and waters, these things. There's something like that. Burning your own furniture of your own house. So we have the responsibility to take care about the environment. This is our only home. The other day I mentioned the like moons. You see, the people through ancient time in dark sky in night, it's something source of inspiration, beautiful, and I say they take often as a poem, she said.
Poets take inspiration from moon.
But moon is not some kind of reservation for our next home. If something happened here and go there easily and settle there, it is impossible. Moon is something like leave it there and look, enjoy it. If we really try to have to go there and settle, I think impossible. So therefore, this blue planet is the only home. Then secondly, and then also, because of the population, in ancient time, okay, I think a limited number, 1 billion human beings, 2 billion, maybe, okay. Just think, consume, utilize nature resources maximum way, okay. But now over 6 billion human beings. And also lifestyle becoming more sophisticated. So therefore, many years ago, I think in England, meeting some expert about environment, nature resources. They told me the present number of populations, then near 6 billion, and living standard of the underdeveloped country. The poorer countries, their living standard raised up to the living standard which northern world enjoy. Then it is big questionable whether nature resources can sustain or not. So now over 6 billion human beings already. So that's also one serious matter. Then basically I always feel, particularly from the Buddhist viewpoint, each individual human life is very precious. But now question is, the question is not just one precious life sort of concern, but entire 6 billion human being, entire 6 billion precious lives. Now that's now concern. So therefore, the limited number of people, I think serious matter. We should think seriously. Then the second point, the environment issue. Violence, bloodshed. These, when we saw, like television, they immediately struck in our mind. So they sort of, what's the feeling or importance of non-violence, that kind of feeling immediately come. But then environment issue, not like that. Something invisible. So gradually, year by year, become worse. And then eventually, when you actually get feeling some difficulties in eye or difficulties breathing and a certain new illness, these things happen, then maybe too late. Therefore, we need a special sort of special attention, and particularly I think education, the importance of awareness of the environment. Then the non-violent method, that also I think essentially should be part of our life, but particularly this taking care with sense of responsibility about the environment, that should be part of our life. So our daily life, including using electricity or any water like that. The other day I also mentioned from my own side, maybe silly contribution. Since now I think a few decades, I never so took bath in Kasa, in tap.
In a bathtub?
And many years ago, it is some skin problems, I do this and that. Otherwise, it's only shower. Never. So, as a small contribution, at least from my part, the
conservation of water.
And then every time when I leaving the room, the hotel room, I always put off the light. So these become habit. So small way make some contribution. Now, now global warming, but some factor may be beyond our control. But according to experts, certainly some of our human behavior also make a contribution for global warming. So the amount of melting ice and North Pole, South Pole are really very, very serious. Matter really threatening. I think many big cities like Calcutta or Shanghai or Tokyo one day may emerge.
Submerge.
Submerge. So at least Dharamsala, my place in India, and Himalayan food, no danger. So quite safe. So that is a really serious matter, isn't it? Now, if we really think sort of objectively, carefully, now there is possibility, if we take care, say things can change. I think more than 20, 30 years ago, one time I was in Stockholm in Sweden. One of my friend told me about 10 years ago, the river in the Stockholm city, in the center of the city, so one big river, about 10 years ago, no fish because of a lot of pollution. Around that river, some factories. But then last 10 years, that person told me, last 10 years, these factories take special measure, although a little bit expensive, but take a special measure, is it to Kasoda?
To reduce the environmental effects.
So after 10 years, now some fish now begin to appear. So it makes differences. So our effort makes differences. So therefore, I think environment issue, firstly, important to educate, make awareness, then introduce each of us, I mean responsibility on each of us, and that should become part of our daily life. And then it really makes some sort of effect. And then also, one time in Germany, one factory, big factory, I was visiting. So they concerned sort of people, explained certain equipment they make especially for the sustainable secretary, recycle.
That would use recycled materials, yeah.
And also the pollution is
and there were also measures built into the system that would decrease the pollution.
So there are, I think, the technology or method is to reduce these effects. So that part about ecology now perhaps completed. now usually wherever I have opportunity sharing with public, two points always keep in my mind. Number one, my commitment for promotion of human value. Human value means certain our emotions or mental attitude which act as a basis of our happiness, our successful life, and also our mental well-being, through that way physical well-being, that we should consider value. Of course our intelligence generally also part of our value, but not very sure. Sometimes intelligence creates more worry, more nerve breakdown,
agitations,
and
obsessive thinking processes can lead to restlessness in one's mind.
So therefore, when I say human value, mainly human warm-heartedness, sense of responsibility, sense of community, these two things based on human, I say, affection, loving kindness. And particularly we are social animal. Social animal means our life, our survival based on the community. So in emotional level, there must be one factor to bring together. That's also human affection. And that affection, although all religious tradition emphasizes importance of that, but the affection itself comes from biological factor. Because we are social animal, and also say our the very life, the very nature of our life, this body, you see, at the beginning of our birth, our survival entirely depend on others' care. Here, mother's care, and with mother's milk, we survived. So key factor in emotional level is the human affection, mother's affection. The child side also, affection towards mother. Just after birth, no idea who is that person. But emotionally or biologically, you see, you totally rely on that person. So long that person close with you or taking because of that. Hold you, you feel safe, happy, calm. As soon as separate, feel anxiety, feel insecurity. We can witness the dogs, cats, or these birds. We can see so long with mother, their offspring. Peace, happy. Now, some scientists experimented. The monkey, some monkey, sort of offspring, or young monkey with their mother, some put separately. Then they noticed those monkey with mother, playful, always happy mood. The monkey who separated from the mother, always ready to anger, fight, ready to fight. And then some, the medical experiment.
Rats, yeah.
Guinea pigs. I think guinea pigs. Or mice, maybe. So you see, the one, what was that? Who said that?
Licking.
Licking. One get more licking, the physical condition better. The same animal, isolated, difficult to recover. So affection is so important. That has not come through religion, but come from nature, mainly biological factor. Then also medical scientists, they notice after birth, next few weeks, mother's physical touch is the crucial factor for enlargement of the brain. So these are, I consider, human value. Now scientists noticed a more compassionate person, their brain function is better. As a preventive measure for illness, also you see better, and recover illness, also you see better, more compassionate person. So, I think logically, more compassionate person, there is more inner peace, inner calmness. Because compassion reduces fear. Logically, compassion there, trust come. Trust is the just opposite of the fear. So fear, very bad for our health. Anger, hatred as well. So the counterforce, these are warm-heartedness. It's clear. So, that is human value. So everybody wants a happy life. I think 6 billion human beings on this planet. No one from early morning, now today, I hope I may get a good fight. Nobody feels that. Today I wish I create creation of one enemy. Nobody feel that. But everybody from early morning, as soon as wake up, or today, I wish I receive some sort of my friend, or some kind of something good things. So therefore, the happy life, or another word. But in spite of that kind of desire, that kind of wish, 6 billion human beings, a lot of unwanted things often happen. These, if we look closely, much of these problems is our own creation. So the countermeasure, knowledge also is important, but mainly warm-heartedness. Now today a lot of problems, I think family level, or community level, or global, or national level. In the past, among human community, some conflict happened. Then, unfortunately, in our long human history, as they method through violent way and try to solve. That's the one way of solution. In ancient time, maybe okay. Each group, each community, more or less independent. So their survival, economy limited, and there are not much sort of complicated sort of situation. So in that case, your neighbor who creates some problem is truly, you can consider enemy. So the destruction of your enemy is victory of yourself. But in modern time, that reality completely gone. Not only nation to nation, but also continent to continent, heavily interdependent. Under that circumstances, according to that new reality, the very concept of we and they is no longer exist. All rest of the world should be considered part of yourself. So, under that circumstances, the concept of war is outdated. Only the meantime, some disagreement, some different interest always there. So now the only practical method is through dialogue, through talk, through sharing that problem. So therefore, now here you need will, determination, wisdom. In that field also, compassion, affection, a sense of responsibility, sense of community is very, very essential. So I think in various fields, individual physical well-being up to the global levels of problem, I think affection is very, very important. That comes from our mother. So everybody, 6 billion human beings, and everybody here in this sort of hall, all come from mother. All survived, grown with mother's milk, or mother's care. So we all have same potential, warm-heartedness. Now think more serious about our inner values, or inner potentials. So that's my number one commitment, promotion of human value. That I usually call, these values are secular values. And the method promotion of these values also should be secular way, using common sense, common experience, and scientific findings. So that's my number one commitment. So here, if I make sort of some connection with environment, I think environment, the external sort of surrounding, beautiful, everything very peaceful, but unless inner environment, some kind of inner environment, not fully take care, then the external sort of peaceful alone will not bring inner peace. So here, for example, the taking care of physical as well as taking care of mind. So similarly, taking care of the external environment, meantime, there is no point to neglect about caring of internal environment. Then another point, another my commitment is promotion of religious harmony. I think I want to say few words, because this morning and yesterday, three sessions, lecture on Buddhism. So I think I want to say to say a few words in this respect. I look this way. Basically, religion, various different religion, is human beings' religion. In heaven, what kind of religion, we don't know. We know the religion on human level, human beings. So therefore, naturally, all religions, their basic sort of message or basic sort of aim is to bring happiness, peace in our mind. So therefore, the all major religious tradition carry same message of love, compassion, affection, forgiveness, and tolerance, contentment, self-discipline. All religions. So therefore, basically the way promote human value, three ways. I look this way. Theistic way of promotion of values, then non-theistic religious way to promote, then secular way to promote. Now firstly, I'm talking, I think The first one, the theistic religions. Of course, within the theistic religion, there are different philosophies, different traditions. But basically, all accept Creator. So, as I mentioned earlier, all traditions have same potential, same message. So there is no reason to fight each other. And firstly, all carry same message and same potential. And secondly, among humanity, because of geographical sort of separation and different times, different traditions already there. Last 1,000 years, different traditions there in Asia, Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, so on. Middle East, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, like that. Then perhaps some different sort of area, some indigenous religious belief also is different there. But major, I think these things. So, they at different time, different climate, different way of life, I think different philosophy or different sort of tradition with different philosophy is developed and necessary. So each one have its own beauty. Now, for example, in order to promote, in order to strengthen human compassion, the secular way and then non-theistic way, theistic way, they are different, but same aim, same purpose. Now theistic, I think wonderful, what's it, way, wonderful approach. God, the creator of everything. So, one time, many years ago, one of my Christian, Benedictine monk, who spent many years in India, Grip Kasa, Father?
Pete Griffiths.
Father Grip or something?
Father Pete Griffiths.
He looks like Indian sadhu. The one Christian, a monk, a wonderful person. Now, looks like this. I'm getting it. I think a person who make that, I think, found it difficult to grammatically. So he or she may put some new word there. So the one time I asked him, what is wrong if you accept previous life? Then he told me the reason. This very life created by God. There's no previous life. When I heard that, it's really wonderful. Very powerful method. Because this very life created by God. Then you got the feeling almost like parent. Very close. God graciously give me this life. Then, very strong sort of feeling of intimacy. Very close this feeling. Very dear feeling. As a result, more dear, more intimacy that brings willingness to follow, to fulfill his wish. So it is very beautiful, isn't it? the other approach, or everything due to your own karma, your own past or what is the action, then you may feel Buddha as a teacher originally
an ordinary person,
like ourselves. Then to some people, I think the other one, I think much stronger, isn't it? So it is own beauty to bring the inner peace, bring hopes, conviction, like that. Then non-theistic religion, like Jainism and Buddhism, not talking about creator, but talking about law of causality. Everything is due to its own causes, conditions. So here, the concept of karma now happen. So your own future, all future consequences entirely depend on your own action. So since nobody want negative consequences, so have to take care about one's own action. Our daily action should be positive action. Positive, negative here means those action which brings consequences. It's good. Good means some joyful, beneficial. Negative consequences means some harmful, suffering, pain. So since we, by nature, do not want suffering, want happiness, so happiness and suffering comes due to its own causes and conditions. So we have to take care about causes, conditions. So that's the non-theistic religious sort of approach. Both have same aim, same goal, but different approach. Now to some people, the theistic way of approach is much more effective. To some people, non-theistic way of approach is more effective. So it is up to one individual choice. So, judging these the reality, then you can feel, oh, we humanity need different way of approach because of different geography, different time, different mental disposition. And meantime, all carry same message, same effect, same purpose. Of course, the ultimate aim, the nirvana or salvation and heaven, these are something different. But these are a bit far. Within this lifetime, more happier, more compassionate, more harmonious. Now, these are the same purpose. So therefore, second commitment is promotion of religious harmony on the basis of mutual respect, mutual understanding. I am Buddhist. Now here, in order to promote the genuine harmony, I usually have three or four methods I practice since, I think, 75. Number one practice is meeting with scholars, and what differences, what similarities. That very helpful to get better sort of knowledge, understand about different traditions. Second, meeting with practitioner who have some inner spiritual experience. is very, very helpful in order to know the other's value, other tradition's value. My own experience, I met number of Christian practitioners, some monks, some nuns, some ministers, and one of my Christian friend, I think a minister, who really was engaged, was taking care of poor people. That was in Australia. So one time, my public talk, he come to introduce me. So he described me as a good Christian. So obviously he knows I'm Buddhist. But you see, he consider as a good Christian. That means there are common practice. So my practice is also is common with Christian practitioner. And then one occasion, I think some of you perhaps may have heard, I think, my previous visit. How many years ago? One time I came to Michigan here. Huh?
9 years ago. Was it
15.
5 years ago.
5 years.
5 years ago. Huh? 5 years.
Then I think most probably I may mention, I think. Then it like it's reputation. But I think some new people also may be here. So I want to share you, with you. That is many years ago, I think 30 years ago, one occasion in Spain. I think Barcelona, the Montserrat Temple or Monastery. So there I met one Catholic monk. His body not big, and his English very poor, I think worse than me. So I have more courage to speak with him. So he came. Then I was told before we met our meeting, some local sort of a friend, he told me that monk, Christian monk, Catholic monk, spent 5 years in the mountain of the behind the Montserrat monastery. Then, out of my curiosity, I asked him. I was told, "You spent 5 years in the mountain, the hermitage, the hermit life."
As a hermit, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very little sort of normal food, like that. I asked, during these years, what kind of you doing there? What kind of practice? Then he mentioned meditating on love. When he mentioned that, when he responded that, in his eyes was some special sort of significance. So as a result, you see, these personal sort of meeting, exchange, and also Martin Luther King. Late Thomas Merton.
Yeah.
Thomas Merton. As a personal contact and exchange and their sort of inner spiritual experiences, these really opened my eye about Christianity. And then, of course, I think every people knows Mother Teresa. How wonderful that old nun. So, personal meeting, the exchange, inner spiritual experiences, wonderful method to closer feeling. Then third group pilgrimage to different holy places. With this concept, actually I started 79 from Sarnath. One day in India, one day I start pilgrimage, one mosque, one Buddhist temple, then Christian church, then Hindu temple, then Sikh temple, I think Jain temple, like that. So with same spirit, Jerusalem, not just tourist, not like a tourist, but like as a pilgrimage. I think I had two or three opportunity, Jerusalem pilgrimage, pilgrim to Jerusalem. So that also very powerful, and with that I also visited Lohut in France, and one time in Fatima in Portugal. I am Christian. I am Buddhist. So my mistake always happened. So be careful. So but in the front of the Christ of Jesus statue in Lohod, or I think Mary statue, and that water, many people cure from that water. So in front of that, I really felt, oh, thousands of people who really need God's help come here, passing through that area, and get almost new life, new inspiration, new hope. I really felt deeply. So that automatically brings appreciation towards Christianity, admiration. And very close feeling of spiritual brothers, sisters. And then at Fatima, little bit of miracle. One Mary statue, I think this size. As my usual practice, my Christian brother, sister, and myself, so we spend few moments in silent meditation. And afterward, we about to leave. And I turn to the Mary statue. That actually Mary statue smiling towards me. If my eyes go something wrong, then different. Otherwise, I actually saw Mary smiling beautifully. So at that moment, I also felt, oh, yes, different spirituality have some sort of miracle weather. Some extraordinary sort of things possible. And at least for me, Mary shows some kind of the genuine sort of spiritual brother or sister sort of feeling. I felt something very special. So perhaps at that time I may turn to Christian. So I mentioned I'm Christian. Anyway. So these are my personal sort of experience. So these brings something very close sort of feeling. Of course I'm Buddhist. My faith was Buddhism. But my respect It was all religion. That's third method. Now, fourth method, like Assisi meeting. Leaders of different tradition come together and speak one voice, peace, and importance of spirituality. It's wonderful. The late Pope initiated that meeting. So, such things, I think, in the eyes of millions of followers of different tradition, I think get some kind of very important message. So, some of my Christian friend, as a sort of response, firstly, they invite me to England, John Main.
To participate in a John Main seminar.
I'm Buddhist, but give them lecture on Bible, Samkara.
Selected passages from the four Gospels.
So each morning, Father Lawrence.
Father Lawrence Freeman, the host.
Father, I know since many years, so I learned from him. As a homework, then give a teaching at the seminar, and with some sort of Buddhist sort of kasoda.
Buddhist perspectives. Yeah.
Buddhist perspective. So I really, at that time, I really found it's a difficult task. Strictly speaking, I am non-believer, isn't it? Non-theist religious sort of practitioner. Strictly non-believer, try to explain to believer according to their most important text, Bible. Then I try my best. I try to reasoning, there should be, or mysterious level, there should be creator. Otherwise, these things, this is some systematic sort of things, it cannot happen. So there must be sort of planner, that's God. So then I think three days, I think seminar went very well. Then afterwards, all these people very much appreciate about my explanation on the some gospel sort of sentences like that. So as a return, some of them came to India at Buddha Gaya and a few days seminar. Each morning they come under Bodhi tree where 2500 years ago is Buddha enlightened. So each morning they come with us, half an hour, silent meditation. So that's, I think, really genuine sort of exchange or sharing is a common experiences. So these four things, since then, whenever I have the opportunity, I practice in these things. So it is very, very helpful. So some of you, if you have some interest, I think that kind of method good for promotion of religious harmony. So today, some cases, religion also become another sort of cause for divisions or conflict. It is very, very unfortunate. So these things are, I think, way to develop inner, pure inner environment.
This special edition of the Wild Side News continues as the Dalai Lama takes questions from the audience during the Peter M. Wege Lecture on Sustainability presented at the Chrysler Arena at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor this past weekend. Stay tuned. And now, we continue this in-depth presentation of the Dalai Lama, taking questions following his presentation on sustainability.
How many questions?
Five.
Huh?
Five.
I see.
The students wrote many, many, many questions for you, Your Holiness, but we will limit it to five,
yes,
if you are willing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you for your wise words about how we can save the planet and improve our mental and physical well-being and move towards harmony. The first question comes from a graduate student who is studying how to make the world more sustainable. And he asks, what is your advice to help us maintain hope given the magnitude of the challenge?
I think the questioner, expert on this field, the supposed person who make answer for that, not expert. I think I should ask him about that question. I don't know. But I think overall, I have this sort of view, or I believe the world, I think including environment, within the 20th century, I think much positive development take place. We can see big differences in the early part of 20th century and the later part of 20th century. Now, for example, the environment issue. In early part of 20th century, I think nobody have this sort of concern about environment. Now, later part of 20th century, the environment issue become very sort of significant, and even political parties, like Green parties, in many countries, or in America, any Green Party? Not yet. Yeah. So, if you have Green Party, I want to join. I think awareness about the environment issue, I think much greater, much increased. So this itself is the source of encouragement, source of hope. So please continue work in this field and make known more people, educate more people, and through media, through newspaper, through some seminar talks, I think that's important, particularly in the education sort of that institution. I think that's very important. As I mentioned earlier, I think from kindergarten, new generation, I think the concept of dialogue, concept of the sense of responsibility to take care the environment, these, I think, should become part of their life through education. I think that's important. Yes?
Yes.
Next question.
Thank you. Our second questioner says, rich countries consume too many natural resources, and the poor face tremendous suffering from unmet needs. Is the concept of what is sustainable different for rich and poor nations in terms of human sustainability, ecological sustainability, or spiritual sustainability?
I think this question brings one very, very serious issue, that is gap rich and poor. Global level as well as national level. In America, a very rich country, but within the American community, the number of billionaires increasing, but poor people, poorer section of people, I think many areas still remain, sometimes become even poorer. One time in Washington, one public sort of gathering, I mentioned it is extremely important to look seriously this gap. This very place, at that time I mentioned this very place, the richest country's capital, but surrounding Washington, poor people. So this gap, not only morally wrong, but practically also source of problem. So the people from the poorer section, sometimes frustrations, and frustration turns anger, anger turns violence. It is a big problem. And the richer family also then getting fear. So it is really a problem. So we have to address very seriously how to reduce this gap. The poorer section, I think, should work hard and with self-confidence. And instead of frustrations or anger, training, education, and work, these are, I think, important. Then the richer side, provide them education, training, equipment, opportunity. I think both sides have the responsibility to reduce this gap. So now, global level, northerner, you have surplus, southerner, especially in Africa and some other places, even basic necessities are not adequate. Same human being, on the same planet, under the same right, but this gap. Really very, very sad. Now the sustainable Satri. What do I call that word?
So, with this background.
Now here, whether American ear is suitable or not, I really feel the American lifestyle or those
affluent countries or communities,
lifestyle, I think some practice of contentment is necessary. Because the other part of the world, now obviously China, India, and some other Asian country, together, I think a quarter of the human population. Imagine, at least India and China together, more than 2 billion of human beings. Then, like the American standard, you see, each person, one car, that means over 2 billion cars. Difficult, isn't it? Pollutions, natural resources, everything seems to be very difficult. So this unequal lifestyle also, you see, have to change. So the poorer section of the people's living standard must raise. Then, as I mentioned earlier, the natural resources, is obviously not sufficient. But of course now the clean, energy, or these new energy resources, now science and technology, there is possibility. But still, look China, now coal, utilize coal, I think, immensely. And also Poland. So these immediate, you have to utilize this. But for long run, very harmful. So they have to raise their living standard. So this really is complicated. Now, some time ago, I was in Japan. I mentioned your lifestyle after Second World War. Each year, every decade, your economy is go like that. So sooner or later, one day, you may find the limitations. So it is better to prepare for that. I mentioned, I expressed. Then after a few years, exactly that situation happened. Some Japanese companies or leader even suicide. Like that. Now American, there are also some talks about recession, or what do you call it? Some difficulties in the economy. So it is better, you see, to know the limitation of the material value, right? Material development. I think, realistically speaking, inner value is concerned, inner richness is concerned, no limitation. So, better no contentment. But external material development, in any case, there is limitation. So, better to have contentment. But usually we just opposite. Spiritual inner development, we contented. Not much care. External material values, in any case there's limitation, but we're not contented. We always want more and more, 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 more like that. So I think some lifestyle, I think have to change. But this is not my business. Then the recycle says, pay out one.
Yes. And also, gaining the habit of recycling materials is also very important.
I think these, you see, now new technologies, new methods, new awareness now there, these are, I think, wonderful. So that much, I know. Then beyond that, no. Next question.
The third student's question returns to the issue of water, which you mentioned. Hundreds of millions of people live near the Himalayan mountains and are dependent on the rivers fed by glaciers that are now disappearing. From your perspective, how can the people and the governments in this region resolve this crisis?
There's many experts really showing, I think, some warning signal. And the amount of sort of melting glaciers, these are quite rapidly increasing. Sometimes water level, those big rivers, sometimes in certain sort of period, very high, and usually low. So the effect of those major rivers in the Asian continent, like Sindh, Ganges, Brahmaputra, and Yellow River, and then Mekong River. So these rivers, I think, cover almost whole Asia. These rivers is basis of billions of human beings' life. So very, very important. So these rivers, major resources from Tibetan plateau. So my Indian friends, Indian experts, you see, they, since many years, they're really showing serious concern, the ecology, special care about ecology on Tibetan plateau, and including deforestation, including preservation of these forests. Fortunately, during Chinese Prime Minister To Rongqing, I think it was during his period, you see, he gave some instruction, special care about these forests. So since then, officially, some effort, but then unofficially, sometimes through corruptions, still, you see, I think carelessness is happening. So that's too very, very important to pay special attention about preservation of these, the resource of these waters.
Thank you.
Finish. One.
Do you want one more or not?
What's that?
One more.
Okay, yes.
Okay. Al Gore and other leaders assert that a shift in consciousness is needed on a global scale to solve the problem of global warming. What role should formal religions play in this shift of consciousness?
I think, at least I think on among 6 billion human beings, there are quite a big portion as a religious believer, religious follower. So naturally, guidance. I think from
guidance.
The religious tradition, I think very, very helpful. Very helpful. The one time, one environmentalist sort of organization, you see, sent some information about environment to late Pope through me. So I brought those sort of material and put in his front. And I briefly mentioned these things. So I think, you see, the religious leaders, the religious traditions, naturally, you see, have the a certain sort of, or say a certain potential. To bring awareness. So Buddhist is concerned, I usually, you see, telling people, the Buddha's birth, Buddha born, not in his palace, but in under big tree, Buddha born. Of course, that not his sort of kasoda. Choice, but mother's choice. then when he enlightened, he got enlightenment. Not on rock, not on mountain, but the bank of Ganges and one Bodhi tree. Under tree, you see, he enlightened. Then his death, not in monastery, but he lay down under big tree. So this shows, you see, Buddha have some special sort of interest about ecology, trees and these things. And then also in Vinaya, there are certain sort of stories. You see, Buddha told some group of monks, you should take care about these trees, these plants, and when you leave, you see, your next group of monk who are coming to your place should tell how to take care, you see, these things. So, I think 2,550 years, right? Seems as Buddha Shakyamuni, we can consider one of ancient ecologists, I think.
Thank you, Your Holiness, for answering our students' very difficult questions with patience, clarity, and wisdom.
That's all.
I would like to now ask Jonathan Rose from Jewel Heart to present the Compassion in Action Awards. Thank you.
So, thank you very much. I want to express, organizer and this university, I very much appreciate. Then, to the audience, if you find some point which you feel worthwhile to think more or implement, then think more and experiment, investigate, further investigation, then implement. And then those points or those audience who feel not much sort of interest, then forget it. No problem. So thank you. Good night.
There are deep and profound moral questions about how we change our world to meet our needs. We will continue to meet here each week to share the wisdom on the Weekly Earth Summit. Thanks to the following underwriters and sponsors for their support of the Peter M. Wege Lecture on Sustainability held this last weekend at the Chrysler Arena at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Jewel Heart, the Tibet Fund, and the Garrison Institute. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet again next Tuesday or anytime on the archives, when your voice of the earth rings out around the world.
here on the Wild Side News.